Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann, along with Phil Bush. And Phil, sometimes it sucks to be right. Yeah. We expected two losses over the last week, and that's exactly what we got.
Yeah, and I think the worst part was that the losses were both very painful in very different ways.
They were. You know, we expected a close loss at Seton Hall, and we got it. And I guess we just maybe didn't predict the pain that would go along with that. But I think we're going to start the show today just talking about the most recent thing in our minds, and that was the absolute destruction in Philadelphia on Saturday. You know, the final score was only 12, which is basically exactly what Vegas pegged it at. But anyone who watched the game knows the game was nowhere near that close. What happened at Villanova, Phil?
You know what? Quite frankly, I think we got out-talented and out-efforted, if we can turn those into to verbs. But especially in the second half, Villanova made it look easy. Their ball movement was better, their shot selection was better, their intensity was better. It was just all around a stark contrast in both substance and style for the two teams, and I think that's probably what's the most disheartening is a team coming off essentially a bye week in Marquette just could not seemingly get their act together, especially on the defensive end, to be competitive against a admittedly tough Villanova team.
Yeah, I mean, Villanova was tough. I mean, pretty much everyone pegged that game as a loss on the schedule anyway, but that doesn't make it any easier to stomach when you just get your doors blown off like that. And, you know, some of our buddies here at Crack Sidewalks posted some of the stats looking at the game, and, you know, something that just jumps out is Villanova's efficiency. And, gosh, like about 80% effective field goal percentage for the entire game. It seems like, they made everything. They got easy shots. They just went through Marquette's defense like a hot knife through butter. And just they did. They just made it look really easy. And I think Wojo was definitely frustrated. It sounded like, according to Matt Velasquez, Philly, we were talking about this off the pod beforehand, he wrote that essentially Luke Fisher was benched in the second half for all intents and purposes, because I think Wojo had kind of seen enough from him.
Yeah, well, I mean, when your interior defense is essentially a rake and a turnstile, I think he just had enough and decided that he was going to go down based on effort. So Fisher got benched. Juwan Johnson was effectively benched from foul trouble. But given the way he was kind of playing, especially on the defensive end, I wasn't terribly devastated by that. Just playing sloppy. It was just all around. And I think the analyst on the telecast kind of hit on it. Marquette's biggest problem, which is something they had under control for most of the season, was live ball turnovers. They were just turning the ball over, which was giving Villanova all sorts of opportunity to get out and run against a not set defense. And Marquette's defense was struggling when it was set. When it was not set, it was just, let everyone score at will. So I don't know what the issue was. I don't know if it comes out as a single game problem that, Villanova was coming off a loss at Butler. They were wanting to get back to their winning ways. They were at home. All the kind of outside evidence would indicate Villanova would win. But given the way Marquette lost, I just don't know if that's representative of Marquette going forward or just an anachronism.
Yeah, according to the box score, Marquette had 12 turnovers. I think I like a recount on that. It seemed like a lot more. And
all the defensive rebounds off of bad shots that Villanova get are nominally turnovers as well, in my book.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. It just seems like Villanova just turned those turnovers into so many easy points, and they just pulled away so quickly. And I guess Marquette hit a bunch of threes kind of in garbage time there in the second half to make the final score look a lot closer than it was. But, you know, when it comes to fixing things like that, Phil, I think we have to just kind of admit that when it comes to an elite team like Villanova, I don't think Marquette really can fix anything that's going to make them competitive against a team that's that good. The question is, are they going to be able to fix it to the point where they can beat teams like Seton Hall, who we have coming up on Wednesday? And, while the loss at Seton Hall was painful the way it ended, maybe we'll get to that in a minute, Marquette played well enough to win that game for the most part, as far as defensively and shooting the ball. And then, you know, it was just a few bad turnovers toward the end, and maybe that's what separates, you know, average teams from good teams, is plays like that. But I do not expect Marquette to beat any really good teams this year with the team that they have. The thing for me is, like, can they get to the defense to the point where they can beat a lot of the teams in the middle of the pack in the Big East, and then, you know, things could get interesting as we get, you know, later into February.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you think any of this is a care? I know it was a weak separation, but given the way the Seton Hall game ended, do you think any of that carries over into the Villanova game? As part of an explanation, you know, there was just, for lack of a better phrase, there was a hangover and some frustration, and admittedly a short roster. Dwayne Wilson wasn't available with his groin injury, and Juwan Johnson was saddled with some questionable fouls in the first half that kept him out, and by no means did that matter in the scheme of the game, the officiating, but you know, Marquette had a shorter bench. Is that kind of a hangover, or does,
yeah,
that,
I mean,
not,
I just,
matter?
I don't know if I thought Marquette was necessarily flat, though, at the beginning. If they came out really flat, and I just thought Villanova was just worlds better. I think almost if there was any hangover effect, it was a carryover effect. It was a carryover from Villanova losing to Butler a few days earlier, and maybe they refocused and say, look, you know, we're not going to start 2017 0-2 after being the best team in college basketball for the calendar year of 2016. You know, they had the first loss, and I think maybe Villanova refocused a little bit, and they just overpowered a team that is just much weaker than them. I guess I don't really chalk up any kind of hangover to this game, because, you know, like I said, at no point leading up to the Villanova game did I really talk myself into thinking that Marquette would win, or even maybe be all that close. I guess maybe I was hopeful that they would play well enough to hang with them for a little bit, maybe make enough outside shots, and if the game maybe slowed down a little bit, which is the way Villanova wants it, I thought maybe Marquette could get the most out of its possessions and, you know, hit some outside shots to maybe hang with them and not let Villanova pull away. But to answer your question, I'd say no, I don't think it was a hangover effect so much as they just played a much better and more motivated team on Saturday, and Villanova just crushed them.
So then I guess the follow-up question is, so we eliminate the hangover. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's a talent disparity per se. I mean, there's definitely a talent gap in some positions.
There's a big one when you're talking about Villanova.
But right.
Yeah, go ahead.
But what – if you had to pick one thing that's the biggest gap in terms of Marquette versus Villanova, is it talent? Is it capability? Is it coaching? I mean, it's a bundle there, but, you know, what is the biggest disparity between Villanova and Marquette, do you think, right now?
I would say the talent. I'd say they have a big advantage in coaching, too, but I think Villanova just has better players at pretty much every position.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not sure I see any one position, Marquette versus Villanova, where I say, yeah, Marquette has an advantage there.
Not even Villanova. With Marcus Howard?
I mean, maybe long term Marcus Howard,
yeah,
will be a better, might be a better player than Jalen Brunson, but
not the way Jalen Brunson played last night, that's for sure.
Well, maybe not, but I think Jalen Brunson probably right now is a better player. I think, like, Jalen Brunson could be, a possible NBA player, maybe not this year, but in a year or two, and maybe Howard will be down the road, but I would say right now, if I'm going Brunson versus Howard, I think I might take Brunson just for one game. Again, long term,
right,
maybe I'd take Howard. Josh Hart's a better player than anybody Marquette has.
Yep, for sure.
Chris Jenkins, I would, you know, for one game, I'd take him over Sam Hauser. Maybe long term, Howard Hauser could be something, but I mean, Jenkins, I'm pretty well established. I just don't see really many positions where Marquette is superior to Villanova at all. So
yeah,
better talent both on the floor and on the bench. So better Marquette in every way.
Yeah, well, and better talent that's performing, you know, right now. I mean, Juwan Johnson, we talked about a little bit, has been very sloppy of late and has been hindering certainly the offense and to a certain extent the defense as well. And Hanif Cheatham is just, you know, it's a little concerning to me around Hanif Cheatham, because while the minutes haven't changed appreciably, his kind of offensive funk is kind of resembling what Sandy Cohen went through last season, where Sandy was pretty decent in non-conference or good enough that you thought, oh, maybe he's going to turn the corner here and really establish himself. And then all of a sudden postseason play shows up conference play shows up, and he just falls apart to the point where he can't even dunk the ball. And Hanif seems to be really, really struggling right now, and I'm not sure what the issue is. I don't know if they're working on mechanics with him and it's in his head or what's going on.
Yeah, that is a concern, because last year we were kind of looking at Cheatham as, all right, this is our next superstar. And he is in a bit of a funk, and like I hope it doesn't last too long and that he's already hit a wall. And I think that would kind of be, concern of what the coaching staff did to him.
Right.
Not to put it on them necessarily, but you got to kind of wonder, like, if you have a guy who looks so great as a freshman, you would hope he would take another step forward as a sophomore, and hasn't quite happened. Not that he's been terrible, but to your point, he just hasn't really shown very much. Like, he hasn't really stood out and taken even any little bit of a step forward, really, as a player.
And, right. And, I mean, he's out there 34, 35 minutes a game, so it's not like it's a lack of opportunity. It's quite frankly, I think it's just straight up that, you know, he has to be out there from a defensive standpoint. He's probably the best defensive player on the team right now, which is a good thing, obviously, not to pick on him in that regard. But, you know, when you're playing 35 minutes a game and you had what appeared to be a great offensive skill set last season, and you're scoring, you know, less than 5 points a game in league play, that's not good. That's Derek Wilson type stuff. But, you know, and that's certainly not a place we want to revisit anytime soon.
Yeah. So Marquette needs to figure out something heading into the Seton Hall game, because, you know, if we still want to talk about being relevant in the Big East, I feel like talking about tournaments sounds silly, but, you know, when you look at the big picture, this is something we said at the end of the last podcast, Phil. It's like, even if Marquette does lose both of these games, what they did, don't give up on this team, because they would still be on track for a KenPom projection of about 9-9 in the conference, which if you can get around there and maybe steal one more and get 10, then I don't know if they would be a tournament team, but I think they would be close. They'd be in a discussion. I mean, what was it? After the Seton Hall game, for what it's worth, how much you can, you know, take as much stock in this as you want, Joe Lunardi of ESPN, who does bracketology, still had Marquette in the first four out.
Right.
So now that doesn't take into account future projections and the game and the losses they have coming, but it's for where they are right now. So, you know, again, if you buy what Joe Lunardi projects, and I think he does a pretty decent job at kind of projecting where teams are and relative to one another, Marquette is right there. I mean, they're just below the cut line. So if they can turn it up a notch here, that's the good news, then they could be in the discussion. The bad news is it looks like they have a lot of L's coming up over the horizon, and the games that they're projected to win, you know, according to KenPom, I would almost say they all are must wins, right? Because you can't drop a game to say Seton Hall this week, which is a game Marquette is projected to win. If you have your eyes on a 9-9 conference record, you know, because if you drop that one, then you got to make it up somewhere else and win the games. One of the games you're projected to lose against a Butler or Villanova or Xavier or Creighton, and that I think is asking a whole lot. So I think it definitely cranks up the pressure in the games Marquette is supposed to win, because they just don't have. I mean, they have opportunities to make up for them, but I think they're going to be such underdogs in all those games. I wouldn't count on them getting more than one win in the 8 games against the top 4 teams.
Well, yeah, and we've sliced and diced the schedule a number of times, but it really does just come down to math in the form of, you know, if you assume 2 wins against St. John's and DePaul, okay, plus the win we have over Georgetown, all right, we've got 5 wins. We got 5 more to pick up somewhere else. Well, you know, maybe you say you get the return game against Georgetown, who's not playing well at all. I think they're winless in Big East play right now.
Yeah, I think Georgetown is. I think Georgetown is seriously starting to get into the mode of needing a coaching change, but that's another topic.
Yeah, that's they're in some serious problems or serious issues. But anyway, so what the reason I bring that up though is that win looks a whole lot less impressive, certainly, right?
Than, right. Yeah.
You know, so so maybe you say two wins against Georgetown, two wins against DePaul and St. John's. All right, you're at six wins there. But then you've got to pick up at least four more, and, you know, maybe you split with Providence. But then, you know, so let's say you split with Providence. Now you're at seven. You got to pick up three more wins somewhere around Xavier, Villanova, Butler, Creighton. Based on the performance against Villanova, that's going to be a tall order, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it is. Like, I would almost move Providence to the realm of you got to sweep them. So if
right.
I think, you know, the way I broke it down previously is you sweep the bottom two, and then those middle three of Georgetown, Seton Hall, and Providence, you got to go 5-1 against in the six games against those three. Well, Marquette is currently 1-1 in those games against the middle of the pack with a win over Georgetown and a loss to Seton Hall. So you've already got your one win, or one loss, I should say, that you would allow yourself against the middle of the pack, meaning you have to win the rest of them. So to me, that means you're shifting Providence. You got to beat them twice.
Yep, and you have to beat Seton Hall.
Yeah, and you have to beat Seton Hall this Wednesday, and then you have to beat Georgetown. So if you do that, then that there's your nine wins, right? Because if you can do that, if you get five against the middle of the pack and get four against the bottom two, so there's your nine, and then you just got to steal one somewhere else. So the margin of error is just so small for Marquette. Now, looking back at that Seton Hall loss, Phil, not that I want to relive it too much, but...
Which would you rather watch on replay, the Seton Hall game or the Villanova game?
Yeah, it's that thing. Like, what hurts more is losing a close game or just getting your doors blown off? I think when you're getting destroyed, at least you can kind of tune out and just,
right.
You know...
Or you can do what I do. Turn the game off, listen to it on the radio while you drive to a party.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, how'd your white elephant go? Did you get anything cool?
I got some grapefruit-flavored vodka that I'm not going to drink. But
well,
but
you may have to slam it if, you know, Marquette has too many more losses.
Too many more Villanova games, and I'll be forced to drink
but,
it for sure.
But, you know, going through the Seton Hall game, I mean, they had that game, Phil. And that's the thing that hurts the most is when you can win a game that you're not supposed to, then you all of a sudden get on a path to maybe some relevance in the Big East and maybe finishing in that, you know, around that fifth spot in the league, which is kind of what I think is a tough yet realistic goal for this team, is if you can get around that level, if they could have stolen that game. But gosh, there are so many mistakes down the stretch, and, you know, it was giving up. They were obvious, right? I mean, it was
right.
Giving up boards on missed free throws, and then the turnover, and then the turnovers and the bad plays on the offensive end, and they just gave the game away to Seton Hall. So as painful as that was, you have to be somewhat hopeful that if they can, you know, just shake off this Villanova loss at whatever we were supposed to lose, we lost it. Now we're playing a team that we had on the ropes and we gave it away. If you could just fix those mistakes, Phil, I really think they can beat Seton Hall at home.
You would think you've got the home court advantage going for you. Hopefully, Dwayne Wade,
he's coming back.
He's got a year of eligibility left.
That fixes everything.
Amazing. No, Dwayne Wilson. Hopefully, will be healthy for the game, or at least
yeah,
ready to play.
Gosh, but like, I hope he's back. Man, when you've got a nagging groin injury. I mean that could last all season. But
yeah.
Wojo's in a tough spot there because he needs the wins, but he needs Dwayne Wilson all season too.
Correct. Right? Yeah.
You need him against Seton Hall, but you also need him, you know, really starting on that stretch, starting from January 28th through really to the end of the season, where you'll have a lot of opportunities for wins. But back to your point, yeah, hopefully Dwayne Wilson can help this week because I think they would really benefit from having that extra guard and senior leader, he's a redshirt junior, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
on the floor.
Well, you know, and if nothing else, it gives them an option to spell Juwan Johnson. You know, so not having to depend on him so much, and perhaps we did see a little bit of in the Villanova game and late in the Seton Hall game, Caton Reinhardt at the three, which was not terrible. And we should.
I think he's more comfortable there, wouldn't you say? Because I mean, he's just not a four, and he, I know he tries his best to be a four when Marquette needs him to be, but that's just not his strength. But and yeah, I would say, you know, when Juwan went out of the game and Caton had to play there, he did okay.
Right, and we should comment. We've bagged on Caton, but his 3-point shooting has certainly come back in Big East Conference play.
He's come back to the mean a little bit, and I still wouldn't put him in a position where I'd say, you know, he should be getting necessarily starters minutes or anything. But he's not at the point where I say we just can't play him, which was the trend we had early on in the season. But yeah, that's been helpful because Marquette's going to need him, especially if they're going to be without Dwayne Wilson for an extended period of time.
Right. Well, and you know, the Seton Hall game, the funny thing was that Marquette had to fight back a couple of times. I mean, if it, you know, as painful as it is to remember, if you think back on it, I mean, Marquette was kind of sort of out of that game, you know, with 14 minutes left to go. They were down 11 or 12, you know, and fought back and then took a what should have been an insurmountable lead, even if you look at KenPom. Marquette had like something like an 87% win projection forecast with 45 seconds left. You know, so not that clearly it couldn't be a guaranteed win at that point, but I mean, they by all accounts should have won. Now the question is, how do they fix those mistakes? I mean, do you put the late game breakdown on coaching or do you put it on the players themselves? I mean, I tend to look at it as the coach can only do so much. The players have to actually execute.
Yeah, was a game I've really just put on the players. I mean, Wojo, I think he had some good plays called. He used his timeouts. He composed the team. He can't go out there and get the boards for them. And, you know, then, you know, what was it? Who was it? Juwan that had the big turnover late. And then Luke had a wide open dunk and he just fell like he got halfway
took
up.
Off and, 2 inches too soon and missed the dunk. And
yeah, on the way down, he was probably thinking, uh-oh, I'm not going to get there. And
right.
Tried too hard. He probably should have just let it go and let it float in there. But, yeah, I just – the Seton Hall game, I think the players kicked that one, to put it gently. I mean, they just – I don't know what else Wojo could have done other than grab the rebound himself,
or make
the right play on offense himself. So yeah, the players got to be looking at that. Guys, we just gave that one away. We're not going to give away this one this week.
I bring that up is if you're looking for a reason to be optimistic, I mean, those players made mistakes type of results are, I would say, far more correctable than coaches making, you know, blunders and issues and stuff, right?
I mean, right, and like not, it's not like Marquette wasn't prepared for that game or like didn't know what they were doing out there. Like it, I mean, it almost kind of seemed that way at Villanova when they. But again, that's another issue. I think Marquette or Villanova's just so much better. But Marquette was ready for Seton Hall. They were prepared to go in there and win, and they almost did. They just, you know, players just fumbled it away down the stretch. So you would hope they would be a little more composed at home this week, and I think they will be. I think Marquette bounces back this week and beats Seton Hall at home because they need it. I mean, their backs are kind of against the wall here because there looks like there's a lot of L's coming after that.
Right. Well, I mean, as we've said, it is as early as in the conference season as it feels. I'm going to go a little Men and Blazers podcast here, but you know we're 3/18 of the conference season at this point, which reduces to 1/6. So we're pretty
great,
you know,
math.
Math is great. We're pretty far along, you know, even though it doesn't feel like it. So you're going to have to get a win here to be able to start to string some stuff together. You got DePaul coming up on Saturday afterwards, so you know. Theoretically, that should be though Villanova struggled with DePaul, so who knows. Transitive property would mean that Villanova beats us by like 6. But to go further math. But, you know, so hopefully if you can beat Seton Hall, which I'm with you, I do think they win. I don't think it's going to be a blowout for Marquette, I think it's going to be a confident win. I don't think it's going to be a win where, you know, we're really chewing our fingernails at the end. I think it's going to be a game where we're up 6 or 8 at the end of the game and kind of getting fouled, going to the free throw line to extend the lead type of thing. But who knows? We'll see. But if you can win against Seton Hall and then you can win against DePaul, you're 3-2 with some tough games coming up. But if you can win a couple of those, which they're not projected, they've got what, Butler away,
Butler away, Creighton away, Nova at home, which should be three straight games of brutality, which puts the pressure on these two games this week. You just can't drop them and still hope to remain relevant.
Right. So if you get 3-2 going into that murderer's row, I mean, in theory, if you go 3-2 through Saturday, then if you end up what, 4-4 by the time you clear the Villanova game, you're not in a horrible position, right? I mean, you're probably on the positive side of where you need to be.
Well, I mean, let's put it a little more realistic way. Let's say Marquette gets these two wins and gets themselves to 3-2, and then they drop those next three, which, let's be honest, there's really not much reason for optimism to go to Butler or to Omaha or to beat Villanova anywhere. So you're sitting there at 3-5, but then the games after that, you get really the bottom three teams in the league, or at least three of the four, with Providence, St. John's, and DePaul. I mean, that's, you know, those are all projected wins for Marquette. So then you go from 3-5 to get back above 500 to 6-5. And then what I think will be the critical stretch of the season for Marquette is the three-game stretch in February where you've got Butler at home, at Georgetown, Xavier at home. And if you look at the KenPom projections, those are all essentially 50-50 games. So if you go game-by-game projection on KenPom, he has them at 8-10, but he has a projection at 9-9, basically kind of acknowledging maybe one of those games go their way. So if you can get one and maybe two of those 50-50 games between February 7th and February 18th, then all of a sudden you're in pretty good shape, because after that those three 50-50 games, you have St. John's and Providence again, where you should be able to get two more wins, and then you've got two really tough ones after that, probably losses Xavier and Creighton.
Right.
So, I would say you could lose those. What I'm saying is basically you could lose those as long as you take care of business this week, beat Seton Hall and DePaul, and you can lose that murderer's row stretch of Butler, Creighton, Nova, it's still not season is over talk, because right. There are still a lot of opportunities for wins. And so even if, you know, say, let's say Dwayne Wilson doesn't play this week, you may even hold him out two more weeks, and then that's when you really start needing him, because there are going to be a lot of tough games, but winnable games starting on January 28th.
Right. So, but it all comes back to that Seton Hall game, because, you know, what you were building there, and I agree with everything you're saying, but what you're building there is a case for the opportunity for Marquette to beat teams like Butler and Xavier at home to secure some key wins. If Marquette can't beat Seton Hall at home, I think the probability of Butler, Xavier, Creighton wins at home become imminently less likely. So, again, it feels early, but that's why this Seton Hall game is so critical, not only for the pure win-loss count, but what it indicates for the rest of the conference season and their ability to actually go. I mean, these games matter in terms of who Marquette really is, right? If they lose to Seton Hall at home, that starts to really say maybe this is who Marquette is, you know, that the result of the Villanova game is closer to what Marquette is than an unfortunate last minute in Seton Hall was, right?
Yeah. And plus, you know, if you do drop this game to Seton Hall, I think, you know, Marquette has some good fans, but I do think you kind of start losing some of the, I don't know if bandwagon's the right word, but some of the fans.
The casual fans.
Yeah, a little more, more casual fans, like the ones who, maybe I'll go, maybe I won't. You know, if you start losing those games, then you're kind of looking at it like some of those fans will kind of say, you know what, it's really cold out, the game's on TV, I'm not sure I want to go.
Yeah, something that got said in the car last night to the wife character was, while listening to the radio, was, you know, I miss when Marquette was good. It's tough because it feels like some of these games, in the past we used to feel confident going into these games. Oh, Marquette's going to be good enough to put on a good show or what have you. Now I'm starting to feel like I'm 50-50 about just about every game about whether or not Marquette can win the games, and that's not a comfortable feeling.
And to his credit, Wojo does say all the time, you know, like when the fans are there, like when they were the last home game, when they really filled for like the Georgetown game, like, you know, he said, you know, the fans were great tonight. We really needed you guys there. And it was, we had, or maybe it wasn't that game. Maybe it was a little bit earlier than that. But, you know, he said in the past after big, yeah, it was the Georgetown game because he was having a little fun with that after, with the, you know, after the, with the
Marcus Howard
jokes and all that. But yeah, he always says, you know, we need you guys out here. And he's right, you know, like that the fans do need to come out. But on the flip side of that, the product needs to be good to get to the fans, because, you know, Bradley Center is a big arena by college standards, and to if you want to fill that place, you got to have a good product out there. And I you know, not that Marquette's a bad product necessarily, but it's not a guaranteed 8,000 fans coming out kind of product just yet. And you got to build a little momentum, and I think you could go a long way by beating Seton Hall this week and taking care of business against DePaul, because God forbid you drop that game on Saturday to DePaul.
Oh my God!
You know, that's a season ender.
Yeah, for sure. Right? Yeah, there's no. I don't think there's. I mean, literally, you could recover from it, but if you lose to DePaul, there's no way you're going in and winning three out of four against Xavier, Butler, and Villanova or something like that, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean that's basically what happened last year, right?
Right.
I mean, you lose to DePaul at home, and then all the fans are off. I mean, they're done.
Right.
Even though that game was early in the season, that was January 20th.
Well, and we ran the scenario. The loss to DePaul was almost certainly the difference between making the NIT and not making the NIT.
It absolutely was. Yeah, they were that close. You know, that hurts. But like I said on last week's, you know, I know you got to respect all your opponents and take them all seriously. That's all well and good. But if you want to be taken seriously and looked at as a decent opponent in Big East Conference, you just don't lose to DePaul.
Right. You can't, absolutely.
You can't lose to DePaul. So Marquette's got to get two wins this week, and as negative as we have felt, and maybe as negatively as we have spoken about the team, maybe even today and beyond that, I still feel good about two wins this week. I really do.
I do as well. I think they're going to have some pride. I think they're going to come humbled but hungry out of that Villanova game. I don't know that they necessarily quit or anything like that. So I think they'll come out with some heart and get two home victories and kind of right the ship and feel a little bit more comfortable and confident about themselves.
Yeah, and, you know, if you want to put a positive spin on it, and you know, like, you know, we feel like we've talked about basically all the negative things over the past 2 weeks. You know, if you want to talk about something positive, the team is still shooting the ball well. Marcus Howard has. You know, there are so many great freshmen nationwide. I think it would be hard for Marcus Howard to get into any kind of discussion for National Freshman of the Year or Freshman All-American, but he has been about as good as anyone could realistically expect a 17-year-old to be in college basketball.
Even take off the 17 modifier. I mean, yeah. As a freshman, he has been in a lot of games, he's been the best player Marquette has.
Yeah, he's been terrific, and I'm so excited for his future and what he's got, you know, what he'll have to bring over the next few years. But it seems when Marquette is needed, you know, needs plays, he has made. He made some big plays in that Seton Hall game. And, you know, granted, he had the big miss, like what was it, about a minute ago. He missed a three, but other than that, he made some big shots in that game, and he made some plays on defense. And so he's a big reason for optimism. You know, I mentioned Luke Fisher's comments in Matt Velasquez's article. It sounds like he knows he was bad in the Villanova game and that he needs to turn around. Hopefully he comes out and is motivated and fired up to make a difference in the Seton Hall game, and hopefully he will. So, I'm definitely going to project two wins this week, and then we'll see what kind of happens after that as they kind of go into a really tough stretch, beginning with Butler on Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, which is always I like the Martin Luther King Day games. I mean, even though they're during the day kind of games, I enjoy that. It kind of gets a little bit of early March Madness flavor, and it's kind of a cool event.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes as far as both wins losses wise and television ratings wise, and if they, you know, get some viewers of that game. And but that'll be a tough one to win though for Marquette. So yeah, I don't know I would necessarily predict a win, but you know, confidence and momentum, they can be a big thing. If you can get a couple wins going, maybe you can steal one here or there. So we'll see how Marquette does this week. One other notable thing coming up this week for Marquette off the court is they do have a transfer visiting. His name is Harry Froehling. He's from SMU. He is currently a freshman, so he would be a mid-season transfer.
would be eligible to play
second semester next year. Right, so he would be a sophomore
after the Wisconsin game next year.
Yes, almost certainly, unless Wisconsin for some reason is a late December game, which it pretty much never is.
Yeah, so, Wisconsin always seems to be the game right before finals. But
like the first weekend of December, essentially. But anyway, Frohley, he's 6'11", 260, so he is a big man. He's a power forward, center. Apparently unhappy with his playing time at SMU, playing about 15 minutes a game. And with Luke Fisher graduating after this year, there should be minutes available in the middle. I really don't know who would be the better player necessarily between Helt and Frohling if Frohling were to come to Marquette. But who knows? He almost sounds like a guy who could play the four next to Helt sometimes.
Yeah, I think he's more of a stretch, or wants to be more of a stretch four, right? He's more of a more traditional stretch four where he can shoot but can go down low if necessary. So I think you'd actually pair him with Helt or one of the other bigs that they have coming in next year.
I don't know if they would do that. Well, I'm getting way ahead of ourselves, assuming he's committing, but he may not. He's apparently also looking at Oregon State. He canceled a visit. He was scheduled to visit Dayton this week, and he canceled it and came to Marquette. So it tells me there's some serious interest, mutual interest between Marquette and Henry Frohling. But
Oregon State thing would be tough because I think their semester starts on Monday, tomorrow, I think. So he would have to commit before their semester started.
Yeah, it would be great if he just, went ahead and enrolled in classes on Monday.
Yeah.
and during an official visit, he starts taking classes. Maybe that would be a first.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But yes, but he would, he fills a need, right? Because while Marquette does have some bigs coming in the freshman class, those guys are really definitely fours. They're not centers. Theo John is a four, maybe a three even, 3-4. And then Ike Ike is maybe a bit more of a project, but a very athletic four. So Frohling, I think, as long as he is willing to spend a lot of time at center, backing up and maybe sometimes move out to the four, depending on how those freshmen come along. I think he could be he would be a great addition to kind of maybe balance out the classes a little bit. He would certainly, I don't know if he would necessarily take a starting role from Helt. Maybe he could, but he would be a class behind Helt. So after Helt graduates in 2 years, he would certainly be, an experienced big man. So I think he's one to watch, and who knows, we'll see if Marquette gets a commitment. Whenever he would have to decide relatively soon,
yes,
wherever he's going. So we may have news on him before the Seton Hall game.
Yeah, I would think we'd know by the Seton Hall game because he's got to select before the second semester starts, whatever school he goes to. I know there was stated some interest that he's also looking at. He's from Australia. There's some potential that he might go play professionally in Australia before he, to get himself ready for the NFL, or for the NFL, for the NBA.
Boy, he'd be a heck of a tight end.
Probably. Because both his brother and his sister played in the Australian professional leagues. Reading between the lines, it looks like there's heavy interest between Marquette and Frohling, especially the timing of his visit. So I think it probably comes down to a Marquette versus the pros decision with somebody like Ohio State being an X factor. But we'll see. It would fit a need, and we've got plenty of scholarships available right now. So.
Right, Marquette has three to play with, and they have one currently for this year, which means something they can offer that maybe not other schools could would be a scholarship for the rest of this academic year. So, he would have to transfer and pay his own way for a semester before a scholarship freed up, because the scholarship that was left vacant by Wally Ellenson, that scholarship has never been used, so it can be given to someone halfway through an academic year. So that's certainly would be one factor to consider, but again, Marquette has three to play with. If they get this guy, I would think they're probably done adding big men for next year. I think they could probably look to add some depth to their backcourt after that if they were able to get Frohling on board.
Right, absolutely, unless in the grad transfer market something can't miss center comes up or something like that.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you never close the door on any position, no matter what your depth chart looks like.
Right.
But I would say
never stop recruiting.
Yeah, you never stop recruiting at all, but I would think this, the priorities would maybe shift to the backcourt if they were able to land Frohling. And there was Elliot, I believe this was. He was a guard in Minnesota. He's a He's a high school senior right now. He said he got an offer last week, so I don't know where that's – but that was the only other recruiting name I saw kicked up in the last week. So some recruiting news to follow, but more importantly, the action on the court this week, Phil. So could be an interesting week for Marquette. Hopefully they just take care of business, right? And then get two wins, and then hopefully we can kind of reevaluate things and see how they've played this week as they would be hit a tough stretch starting on – MLK Day.
Yeah, I'm really hoping the next time we podcast, we're talking about how we can convince ourselves into getting a win against Butler or Villanova based on the great performances they had against Seton Hall and DePaul. I think we will be at that place, but that's really what I'm hoping for at this point.
Yes, it's just such a fine line for Marquette to walk right now. They've definitely got to win the games that they're projected to, or else the wheels could fall off very quickly if they don't. So.
Absolutely.
Trying to remain optimistic. Again, we expected these last two games to be losses, even though they hurt a little bit. Don't give up on this team. Hopefully pack the place for Seton Hall, because Marquette is definitely going to need the fan support on Wednesday against a good team, but a team that Marquette can definitely beat.
Correct.
All right, so guys, we appreciate your listening to the podcast. We always welcome your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com where we post the podcast. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post it on there. And always please review us and rate us on iTunes. Phil, let's have a good week. I know you're going to be there on Wednesday night and Saturday as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get a couple of wins and go from there.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. Until then, seashells and balloons, everyone.